Hello, this is Lisa Meister, and welcome to the podcast, Only God Rescued Me, My Journey from Satanic Ritual Abuse. I am an SRA survivor, and I am honored to bring Kate to you today, who is also an SRA survivor. And she has really only known she's a survivor since September. So I think that you'll find this very interesting to hear her journey and all that she's been through, and especially her heart for God and how he's helping her to heal, even though it's so fresh in the information. So hang on to your hat and enjoy this podcast. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I am so happy that you're here. Thanks for trusting me and coming on and sharing your story. I know that's not easy.
Well, I know that God wants me to do it, and so I'm happy to do what he wants.
That's wonderful. It's not always easy to do what he wants, is it?
No.
Have you shared this story before?
I have not, only with my husband and my therapist.
So you found out in September of this year?
Yes, I was diagnosed with DID in 2019. I was having a medical procedure done, and so I needed a psychiatric evaluation before the procedure. And when I went in to have my evaluation done, I left with papers saying I had dissociative identity disorder and that I should start therapy.
Wow.
Because there was probably a lot of abuse in my past. And so it took me 3 years to get up the courage to start therapy. And I just finally started it this year in September.
What kind of doctor was it that diagnosed it?
It was a psychiatrist.
Okay. So he knew what he was looking at then?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Did he tell you what he thought it was, or did he just say this is a dissociative disorder?
He told me it was a dissociative disorder, but he said that he was pretty sure that I had several different parts and that it would be good for me and all of my parts to get therapy.
So why did it take so long to take that big step?
Part of it was financial, but also I was talking to God a lot about this because over my lifetime, there have been 12 separate occasions where people that I don't even know have come up to me with a word from the Lord and have said, you have abuse in your past, and God wants you to be healed from that, and you need to seek therapy for this. So all of those instances, along with the psychiatrist telling me that I needed therapy, I thought I probably should, but there was financial issues too. Therapy is quite an investment. Unfortunately, I have insurance that pays for most of it. But it took me quite a while to get my head into the game, I guess, because I was so frightened that perhaps it was true that I did have all this abuse in my past. The problem was I had no memory of it.
So how did you view your past up until then?
My past was full of holes. There were great details with which I would remember certain events in my life, but then there were big holes where like whole years would be missing from my memory. And so I didn't feel like I could trust my memory because it was either blank or it was in great detail. For instance, and people laugh at me when I say this, but I remember being born. I have described to my mom the delivery room and what the doctor looked like. And she said that that's an accurate memory.
Wow.
So why, if I can remember something like that, can I not remember being 6 years old? And so that's always bothered me about my memory.
Was your mom abusive?
I don't know. I have a feeling that there was some there, but I don't remember anything exactly yet.
So when the SRA started coming out, how did it present itself to you? How did you start seeing it and looking at it?
Well, before I began therapy, I was praying. I was praying and asking God to lead me to just the right therapist who could help me figure all these issues out. And I wanted somebody that was trauma-informed and somebody that understood how trauma can affect your mind. There are a lot of therapists who don't believe in DID. And I had come across information about that. And so I wanted to make sure that this was a therapist that understood what I was dealing with. And God did miraculously lead me right to the exact right therapist for this. She has never treated somebody with my condition, but she's done a lot of research about it. And she has colleagues that are helping her with my case.
With dissociative disorder that she hadn't worked with before, or the SRA element?
Both.
Okay.
Both, yeah. Yep. And, you know, bless her heart, she's been plenty scared about taking this on, but she's done it because she feels that God is leading her to work with me too. So it, you know, it's just an amazing thing. God led us both together, and it has been the perfect fit for me.
That's wonderful. There's not a lot of therapists that are willing to go in. Number one, they're afraid that they're going to be hit by demons and that life's going to get scary for them. Or two, someone's going to come after them for helping you. So the group finds out who the therapist is that they'll go after. So those are two big fears that she would have.
Yes. Well, and one of my fears was that there would be in mind control circles, they call it a plant. Somebody that is planted in the counseling business to keep someone's programming going and continue their programming and their denial that this ever happened.
So how did you make sure she wasn't a plant?
Well, I prayed and then I asked her directly. I didn't expect that I would get a straight answer from her if she was, but I asked God for discernment and wisdom. And I just felt in my heart that she was not. And she did answer that too, that she was not a plant and that she would never be involved in someone like that, something like that.
Right. Did you start having flashbacks as you started going into dissociation, or how did the SRA stuff come to you?
Usually what happens when I work in my kitchen doing dishes and baking and cooking and things like that, my little personalities, the personalities that are children, like to come out and help with cooking and baking and that kind of thing. And yes, I let them lick the spoon. And that is when I find that I have most of my flashbacks, when the little personalities are closer to the front. And so I was in the kitchen when I had my first flashback, and it was so distressing to me, I had to immediately go throw up. And so that's how I knew that this must be a real memory, because it was affecting me physically. And I didn't think that something I had made up would affect me that drastically.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
And also, I've been really blessed, I guess you could say blessed, that most of my memories and flashbacks that I have happen at home when I'm not with my therapist. And that's another way that I know these things are true and not my therapist planting things in my mind. Because when I'm with her, I don't have any flashbacks or memories at all. It's only when I'm home and working on my own things that these flashbacks happen.
So when you started having the flashbacks, did she already know about SRA? Had you heard about SRA? How did you put the pieces together? Because I know when my flashback started, I had no idea what I was looking at.
Yeah, I also had no idea. And I had told her that there might be a satanic component to it, because I remembered my father talking to me about a satanic church. And at the time, he was in full-time Christian ministry work. And I said to him, well, how do you know what the church looks like if you've never been there? Because he shouldn't have been there. Being in full-time Christian work, he should have nothing to do with it. And he said, well, I didn't think you were smart enough to make that association. And he didn't answer me any further after that.
Wow.
And so I knew that there must have been some satanic involvement on his part somewhere.
And so when he was checking on you to see if you were cognizant of what was going on or if you had no memory of it.
I think he was. I think he was checking to see what I knew. And my mother has done that several times too, where she asks me, well, what do you know about this?
Right.
And so I feel like they are, well, my father's passed away now, but I feel like my mom is really trying hard to find out what I know, which as of yet isn't a lot. But the thing that confirmed the SRA for me was my mom gave me a box of some of my old childhood drawings. And she said, you can do what you want with them. I just want them out of my house. And in the box, there were three notebooks. And every single page in these notebooks was filled with drawings of what I used to call a princess. And it was a picture of a woman wearing a long, wide dress. And she had a very tight-fitting bodice that was strapless. And her face was in a grimace. And she was holding what I thought at the time was a sword. But now when I look back at the drawings, it's an upside down cross that she was holding.
Oh, wow.
Because the sword doesn't have a point on it. It's just the bottom of the cross. And then in the sky over the princess's head were upside down stars in circles or pentagrams.
Right.
And so this is what I drew obsessively as a 6 and 7 year old, to the point where my teacher had to come over to me on many occasions and take the notebook away, because I would sit there and obsessively draw these pictures.
Wow.
And so it was that realization where I said, there's got to be something evil here, and I've got to get to the bottom of this.
Right.
Because if there's any strongholds left over, I need to renounce them, and I need to have Jesus be in the middle of this therapy so that I'm not ruined by this.
Right. I know that when I was first figuring out the SRA, that in it throughout my whole life, I would always like doodling. I'd always doodle a star with a circle around it, or a circle with a star in it. And then once the SRA started coming out, I was just doodling one day and I looked, I'm like, I just filled the paper with pentagrams. I've been drawing pentagrams all these years, and I just saw it as a circle with a star in it.
Right. You
know? And in my mind,
yeah,
you know, I just stayed there and I just always doodled that. And that was a real shock to me. It's interesting how we may be shut down with what happened, but
yes,
our bodies have to express it somewhere, somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So like with little kids, when they're being abused, they tend to draw about it. And a lot of times when they get to the therapy, they hand them blank pieces of paper and they see what they draw, because kids that can't verbalize things can certainly draw it.
Yes.
So that's really interesting. And my parents also did the, you know, checking to see what I was cognizant of. So
yeah,
my husband and I both had a lot of very strange conversations with my parents that made no sense. And later when it all came out, it's like they were checking to see what I knew and what I had told Patrick, my husband, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were making sure it was still repressed and pushed down and that I wasn't going to talk. So it's very common that that happens. Kind of interesting.
Yes. And at first I didn't realize what she was doing, but it was my husband who pointed it out to me. She knows this and she's checking in with you to see what you know. And that was a big breakthrough for me because I hadn't realized how insidious this can be.
Well, it validates. It yes. shows you, yes, I am on the right track here. And mm-hmm. especially because our stories are similar. And as yeah. we talk to survivors, we're like, yeah, that happened in my family too. Yep, they were doing that too. The plants, you know, the Stockholm syndrome, when they send you someone to be your friend yeah. so that you will tell them, they'll be the person you say, ooh, you know, some bad things have happened to me. They're called active and they can say, whoa, she's talking. And then they can do stuff to try to silence.
Yes.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll try to erase the memories.
So like doctors, therapists, psychiatrists can be plants. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, she's talking. And then they can start the, okay, it's mental illness, you know, and then they'll start hitting it that way. If you're not going to stay yes, silent, then they have to attack.
Yes. And I can see many people that were in my parents' lives that I felt really scared of. And I can see that those people were in their lives as part of this SRA abuse, where like my father's doctor would provide him with many big bottles of sleeping pills. And I believe that I was drugged and that my mother was drugged on several occasions. Otherwise, nobody would have been able to access me for the abuse that I've remembered.
Right. Yeah, my dad was a pharmacist. So there was, you know, like
mm-hmm.
there's always drugs used for the victims in these things. Cause then they're saying, well, if you want us to stop, say something. And we can't mm-hmm. speak, we can't move. Like then they say, see, you want it. And
yeah.
the kid's like, why didn't I say anything? I must have wanted
mm-hmm.
it. You know, and it's all part of the mental gymnastics that they're playing with us from the time we're very small. And drugs really
right.
adds to the, well, maybe it didn't happen feeling, or, oh, I just feel really bad. A lot of stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
So how long has your dad been gone?
He died in 2007. And the day before he died, he had asked my mother, because my mom had been at the hospital with him for 90 days straight. She'd been there every day. And he asked if she would stay home so that my dad could spend some time with me, knowing that he would imminently be dying. And I had the feeling that he wanted to tell me something important, but I didn't know what it was. And whatever it was something that made me really scared. So I sat there with him throughout the whole day. And I got there at 8 o'clock in the morning and I sat there with him till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And at 3 o'clock, I said, well, Dad, you know, it's getting to be time for me to go. I want to get out of here before rush hour traffic. And then it's a 2-hour drive home. And my dad said, well, I need to tell you something. I said, okay. He said, I'm really sorry for all of the things I did to you when you were younger, all those years ago.
Whoa.
And now I know at that moment, I switched personalities. I didn't realize it at the time. And it was my peacemaker personality that came out and said, all is forgiven. But the reason we said all is forgiven is not because I honestly forgave him. It was because of, I used to work as a nurse. And being a nurse, I know that people who are dying oftentimes will seek forgiveness as their very last act on earth so that they can die in peace. And so I gave him that forgiveness, hoping that it would help him die faster than for actually really forgiving him. And all I could think of in my mind was, I've got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. And so I did leave. And then the next day he died. And that was 7 years before I found out that I had dissociative identity disorder. So for 7 years, I'm mulling over this, thinking, what does all this mean?
Right.
And I had no idea.
When he said he was sorry, did your mind at that point connect it to anything? Or was it still walled off? I'm not going to think about that. I'm not going to go there.
It was very walled off for a long time. It wasn't until a couple years later that I actually had my first memory of abuse, my first flashback of abuse. And that was happening when I was an infant.
Wow. So was that like abuse from your dad in the home? It was not SRA abuse, or?
It was abuse from my dad in the home.
And that's also a hallmark of these SRA cult families, is they also do sexual abuse in the home, along with taking their kids to the rituals and doing that there as well.
Yeah.
Wow. So you were in contact with your dad then up until he died?
Right.
Did you feel this sense of unsafety with him?
Oh, yes.
Through the years?
All my life. I never felt like I was safe with him. Even when my mom was there with us, I never felt safe.
Right. Yeah, I told a friend before the SRA stuff came out for me, I think it was like 6 months before it finally flashback started. I told her I was deathly afraid of my dad. I said, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it's really bad. And I heard myself say it, and I'm like, what does that even mean? You know, like just these things pop out, and I'm like, I feel that's true, but I have no idea where that came from. You know,
right.
It's crazy.
I can exactly relate
to
that.
Crazy. Yeah. That's one thing for me, when the information started coming out, I didn't know if I could trust that or not, but it felt true. You know, it was like, it, part of the dissociative thing is information starts coming to you as if you know about it, but part of you doesn't know about it. So it's almost like having a conversation with half of you that's in the know and half of you that's not in the know, and you're starting to communicate and you're like, I don't know if I can trust you. It's very confusing.
It is. It's really confusing. Yes. And one of the best things that ever happened to me was having my husband validate my completely over the edge, creeped out feelings about my dad. And my husband, after meeting him once, said, I see what you mean. There's something really off about that man.
Right.
And so to have that validated for me was a huge step.
Your husband sounds amazing.
He is. He's a wonderful guy. He's been so supportive through all this. I mean, you can imagine what it's like. Your wife says to you, I think I might have been abused at some point by my dad. And then these years go by, and all of a sudden, surprise, your wife has multiple personalities, and the ones that sound like little girls want to talk to you. That's very difficult for a spouse to take.
And how long have you been married?
25 years.
Yeah.
But my inward team, I call them my team, my inside people, took care of everything so seamlessly for me that my husband never even had an inkling that I might have multiple personalities.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think mine did either. I think it started making sense. My kids did when they heard about it. They're like, oh yeah, let me tell you your personalities. And they just started going into it. Kind of interesting. My husband was like, wait, what? You know. So it's kind of interesting how, depending on the person, how they see us and understand how we work.
Yeah. Yeah, my husband has been real supportive. He's come to therapy with me a few times.
Wow.
And so that's been really a big deal for me that he would support me in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got some really strong spouses out there, husbands and wives, both directions, mm-hmm. that have come alongside and really helped facilitate healing. And then there's others that just make it way worse, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it depends, and I can certainly on their walk with God and, you know, their
right
level of compassion in general sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And I can see why that would happen, because this is a really hard thing to deal with. And if you are, you know, if you've been with somebody for 25 years, and then all of a sudden out of left field comes therapy and multiple personalities and not even allegations of just abuse, but horrific mind-bending abuse. It's really hard for them to get used to that.
Right. Is he like going into literature on SRA or like researching it himself, or is he just following your lead and what you're explaining to him and kind of sticking where you are?
He's not a big reader. So usually if there's something I want to share with him from a book, I'll read it to him out of the book. He had a stroke several years ago, so things in his brain don't go exactly the way they used to. So I'll share something with him out of a book, or I'll share part of a podcast with him. And that's how we've been learning about it together.
When you have a memory, a flashback hits. Okay, so you have like a physical response. What kind of physical responses? Now, I know nausea and vomiting. Have you had like pain? Like, how does it work for you?
Lately, the memories that I've been having are what I believe are electric shocks. And when I say I'm having a body memory, what that means to me is that my entire body feels it, but it's not a picture in my mind, like most memories would be, like, oh, I remember walking down by the lake and seeing the sunset. You can see that in your mind's eye. But when I have a body memory, it's a feeling that my body feels. And at first, it was a memory of sexual abuse in the home, but now I'm having memories of electrical shocks. And the memories happen kind of in that fuzzy area between wake and sleep. And so I'll be just drifting off to sleep, and all of a sudden I get this jolt, like an electrical shock. And it's such a hard electrical shock that it makes my whole body have searing pain. And so that's what my memories have been like lately.
Do you have it go like into your brain with its kind of a sound to it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like a loud clap.
Right.
It makes a noise, and then yeah.
And your whole body just kind of quivers. Mm-hmm. With it. Yeah.
Yes.
So a lot of times that goes to the MK Ultra stuff with lab mm-hmm. kind of programming, and because like I've been having that too and trying to put all that together. So even within SRA, there's layers of what were they involved in. And a lot of times it's not just the rituals. Sometimes if they move it to the lab, right. And you've got other elements that they're bringing together. Was there Freemasonry in your background?
My grandfather and my grandmother, my dad's parents, had several Freemasonry symbols in their house, like plaques on the wall or artwork that would have Freemasonry symbols in them. But as far as I know, they weren't heavily involved in that, but I honestly don't know for sure. I do know that the Satanic Church that my dad told me about was in an old Mason's lodge.
That makes sense.
And that had closed down, and then the Satanists were using that for their meetings.
So what was your dad doing in the church as his job?
Well, when I was 5 was the first time my family went to church. And the way my father told the story was very joyfully about a wonderful salvation experience he had and how he felt so welcomed in the church and made lots of new friends. And pretty much right off the bat, when he got into this church, he was selected to be a deacon. And my dad used to tell a lot of tall tales about his work experience. He would tell people that he was an engineer, but he never went to college for that, and he never took the certification test to be an engineer. And towards the end of his job, he did try to take the certification test, but he failed it 5 times.
Wow.
And so he was not even close to being an engineer. And he also passed himself off as a contractor, that he was a licensed contractor, but he was never licensed. So there were a lot of ways that he kind of tried to slide under the radar. And my mom maintains, oh, what a man of integrity he was. But no, he really wasn't. So he started off being a deacon in the church. And then after a year or two doing that, he became an elder in the church. And I think the church liked him because they had several building projects that they wanted to do. So, of course, he was on those committees being, you know, an engineer.
Yeah.
And so he helped with those building projects and that kind of thing. And then when I was 16, his engineering business folded. And they had hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt from that. And I'm not sure of all the details with that, but I know it was a pretty hard thing for him. And then somehow I was involved in a student ministry. It's a very prominent high school ministry that has chapters in most high schools around the country. And they got an offer from this student ministry to come on staff with them. And so my parents did that. And they were even in a supervisory status with this ministry toward the end of my dad's life.
Was it Campus Life? What was the ministry?
Campus Crusade.
Campus Crusade.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. And they had a high school ministry that my parents worked for.
That's interesting. I find that these cult families like to hide in the church, and they tend to get themselves on boards or in ministry positions, and they rise very quickly there.
Yes.
It's interesting how that happens across the board, but they tend to get to places of power in the churches. It's like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't say for 100% certain that by the time that my father was doing these ministry things, that he was still involved in Satanism. I can't say that for sure. Because honestly, I don't know, but I do know that was the case in my younger childhood.
Right. Yeah. I wonder if they can get out. if they're allowed to get out once they're in.
Yeah, if I'm correct in my speculations, and that's all it is just speculation. If I'm correct in my speculations about how involved my dad was with the Satanism, I kind of wonder if maybe he couldn't get out.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Because I know that they've got dirt on them to keep them silent so that, I mean, their ranks are tight. They don't talk.
Well, and they tried to, fortunately, before I started having all these memories, I had read your book, Only God Rescued Me. And I had also read a book by a lady, Linda Irons. And she has written some books that are half fictional, half true, about satanic ritual abuse. And I believe that my dad had some really strong satanic programming that would have come from his childhood. And with that kind of programming, it would have been impossible for him to get out. And I think that the last time that we spoke, the day before he died, I think that he was looking for fire insurance from me when he asked for my forgiveness for all the years of abuse. And I think that's what his ultimate goal was, is that he wanted to avoid the fires.
Yeah, they've got to have some kind of plan for the afterlife. Either that they're like, oh, I'll con God into, oh, I want to get saved now at the end. Or the devil's going to give me power and ruling in hell and I won't be a victim there. I will be a ruling power because that's what I do in life. I'll just be doing that in the afterlife. So I wonder where he came down there.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like, ooh, now's my time to get right with God.
Yeah.
Sneak it in before I die sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And hopefully he did. You know.
Well, that is my hope. I really feel like in order for him to be the way he was, he had to have endured a lot of abuse in his own person. And so not that that's an excuse, because, you know, I was terribly abused and I didn't abuse my own children. So I believe that people have the power to walk away from it, you know, with the strength of Christ. But I think he must have been terribly abused.
Well, there has to be a point where you're going to line up with what they're telling you to do, or you cannot line up with it.
Yeah.
Because you're forced to do things in these rituals when you're little. You have no choice. They will torture you. They will do whatever they do until you comply, and you will comply because that's the way it is. But they know whether you are choosing to jump in and do it, or you are really fighting being able to do it.
Yes.
So some, you know, it's interesting to me how that works. So what's that line, and where does the child reach that line of, I'm just going to go ahead and do what they tell me to do. My life's going to be easier if I do and line up with it, or maybe they like it, or I can't do this. I am not okay with killing these babies. I'm not okay with killing animals. I'm not okay with the orgies and the blood and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what is it? What's that line for the child, and how do they get there? And what is it about the child that gives them that ability to turn away and say, no, I'm never going to line up with this?
Yes. That's something that I think about a lot is, you know, could I have said no, even if I wanted to?
Right.
But their reasoning and logic is so faulty that no matter what you decide, you're still caught.
Right. Well, for so long, I was so angry with myself that I should have just let them kill me. Why didn't I just let them kill me? And my husband finally got my attention after struggling with that concept for so long. He's like, Lisa, them killing you was never on the table.
Right.
That wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that makes sense. So it wasn't a weakness in me. It was part of the game they're playing that wasn't, you know, some kids they're willing to kill. Other kids aren't going to be killed. I don't, you know, who knows how they come up with.
Well, and in one book that I read about MK Ultra, there were, they would have the cult would have to pay more money to the parents if they killed the child.
Oh, okay.
And it was somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, $100,000 that they would have to pay if they killed the child.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's a financial thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the kids, you know, from the foster system, a little more disposable to the groups, because we know
right.
kids disappear from the foster system all the time and they're never found. Where do all those kids
yes.
go? You know, mm-hmm. they just disappear.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
How, like, I hear a lot of peace in your voice as you're talking. I mean, even about these scary, horrific things. And that's not normal for someone who's just a few months into this. So how do you account for that?
I have walked with God since I was 16 years old. When I was 16, well, when I was five, I went to a Billy Graham crusade. And he explained everything so clearly that as a five-year-old, I knew I had to go forward and give my life to Jesus. And at that point, I didn't have any realization that there was anything satanic going on in my life. In my conscious mind, all of that was completely separate, and I never had a thought about it. But so I received Christ at 5 years old, and then every day after that until I was 12, I would pray to receive Christ again, just to make sure that it wasn't yeah. going to go away.
Yeah.
And then when I was 12, I went to summer camp, and the pastor at the camp said, no, you only have to do this once. You don't have to do it every day. And so that was good. But then when I was 16, and I don't know why, but when I was 16, I felt that I just had to end my life. Mm-hmm. I was going to do that. And I don't know why, but the night that I had planned to do it, a friend from school, well, actually wasn't even really a friend yet. He was just an acquaintance, captain of the football team. So that might have had a little bit in getting my interest. But he called me and he said he was starting a Bible study and would I like to be involved in that? And that really... that really resonated with me. And so I said, yes, I would be in the Bible study. And after that, I didn't feel like killing myself anymore.
Wow.
And so I really look at that as a miracle that God did to save my life.
He brought hope to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And the things I learned in that Bible study were absolutely life-changing things. About who I am because Jesus saved me. You know, I'm an overcomer. I am not a victim. And having those kinds of words spoken over me was really powerful for me. Yeah. And so I have walked with God for a lot of years. And when I was 37, I had two heart attacks. I was completely immobilized with fibromyalgia. I had inflammation in my lungs. I had inflammations in my reproductive organs. I had terrible joint destruction and joint swelling. And all of these things, my doctor said, had to be caused by abuse in my life.
Oh, wow.
Because you don't just, with no family history, you don't just suddenly one day wake up with these things.
Right.
And I said, you know, at that time I said, well, I don't remember any abuse. And he said, well, it sure would explain a lot. And so then a few years ago, I said, you know, I think I've remembered some of that abuse. And he said, see, I told you.
Wow. Not a lot of doctors put that together that I've heard about.
No. But I have five different autoimmune diseases that are causing the destruction of my spine and my joints and ligaments. And so walking with God through that kind of suffering, I think it really polarizes you. And you're either going to believe that what God said is true and live in that, or you're going to give up on it. And I chose to follow God through it. And he has met me at every turn with peace and safety and love.
Some people believe that because God didn't stop the abuse, he wanted it. Where are you on that?
My very first memory of abuse is, like I said, it was when I was an infant. And in that moment, as my father was bending over me, Jesus stood beside my bed. It happened in my room. Jesus stood beside my bed, and he very, very gently picked me up, put his hand over my eyes so that I would dissociate, and held me close.
Wow.
That is my very first memory of abuse. So if those kinds of things happen to me, which I know they did, and Jesus can rescue me like that every time, I'm not going to be afraid of the abuse. And no, he certainly did not want it to happen, because he did rescue me right out of the middle of it.
Wow. Now, I have some other survivors right now that are wrestling with, I am evil. What would you have to say to that? Are we evil because we were abused in SRA?
Oh, I would say no, absolutely not. Yes, evil things were done to us, but we are not evil. If I was evil, would Jesus have picked me up and held me close? No, he wouldn't have. We're not evil.
That's beautiful. I love the love you have for God and the closeness with him. And that's when we first started talking. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. So I really wanted everybody to hear this, because I really think healing is, healing goes faster if we're close to God and we have trust in him.
Yes.
Have a foundation with him already, where if we're struggling with, why did he allow it? Why didn't he stop it? Okay, I can't trust God either. Then we're chugging with all these thoughts and issues and struggles within ourselves instead of fighting this battle of healing, you know, and then we're struggling with God instead of fighting, you know, the demonic.
Yes.
Which is what we have to do to heal.
Yes, I agree with that. And my therapist told me that I'm making phenomenally fast progress, but I don't think that that is anything that's special about me. It's what's special about who I've put my faith and trust in. And that when you allow Holy Spirit to be part of your inner team, you know, when I picture my inside world, Holy Spirit is present with my altars just the same way they are present. And I can see him in my inner world. And that's because at 5 years old, when I asked Jesus to save me, Holy Spirit came in and has been a part of my life ever since. And so having that spiritual power behind you as you move forward through abuse like this will make things go much faster for you.
I interviewed Jennifer, and her she was not a survivor, but her two daughters started telling her about abuse when they were very small. And her daughter said, "Don't worry, mommy, Jesus is with me. You know, when they hurt me, he takes me away to heaven."
Aww.
You know, and oh, did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I've got my all of a sudden you're just gone. Okay. So while I try to get that back, the interesting thing is that there we go. God is there for the kids to get them through.
Yeah.
He makes a way. And sometimes it's him taking us up to heaven or him helping us dissociate. And it's important to understand that he's the one that got us through that. Even in the midst of where the demonic has the most power, Jesus is still working. That is amazing to me.
And what a gentleman he is. He does not swoop in and grab the child and rush them away and say, "You have no power here," but he lets those people continue doing their evil thing, but he rescues us in a supernatural way so that we come through life unscathed, virtually. You know, I could have gone my whole life and not known a thing about this if I hadn't gone to that psychiatrist. I would never have known a thing that there was anything different about me.
Now, some people would say, "Oh, well, that says to me that this isn't real." But then you got to remember all that you have said about when you have the flashbacks and the body reactions that go along with it. And then through your life, having times that were just gone and your parents checking to see what you remembered. And, you know, you got to pull all that together. And like some survivors, like, "I was fine until I started having flashbacks. And then all of a sudden I was a crazy person." It's like, well, all that stuff was there. It just gets stirred up when all the flashbacks are just coming down so hard on us. What would you like to say to the church?
Well, that is something that I've been wrestling with over the last week. I think it's really important that the church knows that this is going on. And I have talked with my pastor's wife, and she shared with the pastor some of the things that I have remembered, because I want them to know that that is in my past. I want them to know that I'm working on it, that I'm in therapy, that I'm doing all kinds of interventions every day to deal with these memories in a constructive way. And I just want them to be able to have a front row seat to that. And the reason for that is because the enemy gains his power from secrecy. If we are keeping our abuse a secret, if we are keeping secrets about our lives, then people can't see God work in our life. And so I think it's really important to be upfront and honest about what has happened in the past.
Absolutely.
So for the church, what I think the church needs to know is that yes, indeed, this goes on. And it could very well be people in your church that are doing this right now. And our church has a specific way of preventing things like this from happening on church property. Every single door inside the church has a window in it. And one person is not ever allowed to be alone with the children. There has to be two people at all times. And I really appreciate it that they really adhere to that standard, because that means that the children at our church are safe.
Right. What would you like to say to society?
Um, the repressed memory thing and the satanic panic thing were a lie made up to make sure that people do not believe us. And they were made up by people who were plants from the enemy's side to discredit us and to make us look like a bunch of Looney Tunes. And the fact is that what we are talking about is absolutely true.
What would you like to say to survivors?
Oh, you are so loved. You're not evil. You are so loved and cherished. And Jesus wants to do amazing things with your life. He wants to take all of this twisted pain and turn it into something beautiful. God works all things together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose, even and especially SRA.
It's pretty amazing. He can use that for anything good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shows how big he is. It really does.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, tell you what, I don't see anything good coming from it.
Yeah. But the friends I've made through this, you and other people in our Facebook group and other people who have made YouTube videos about this, I've found such a cherished network of friends out there. And it's like when we know we've been through the same thing that cuts through all the friendship red tape and you just go right to giving each other a big hug.
Right. Yeah. Yep. We are overcomers. We're victors.
Mm-hmm.
Not survivors. You know, we
that's right.
We survived what we did and now we are overcomers. And only God's power and light can do that. I love where you are with God, and I love the trust that you have with him, knowing that he's good. And I really think that that has a lot to do with how fast you are progressing and how well you survived mm-hmm. all years until, you know, he's like, okay, I got to get Kate to 2021 and then we'll deal with
uh-huh.
it. And he knows the date and he knows the time and you know, we can trust him with all that.
Yes, and looking back, I can see that every detail was part of his plan to get me to where I am today.
Yeah. Yeah. I am so honored to know you, and I am really excited to see where God's taking you, and because I know that you're going to be very influential in helping other survivors become victors and getting set free. So I'm going to have fun watching you through the years and seeing all that God has.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you so much for coming on today and talking with us. I hope you'll come on again in the future and give us
I'd like to
another check-in and how you're doing and how you're figuring things out as you progress through.
Sure.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'd like that. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.